This is Joe Caramagna, writer and letterer at Marvel Comics, and you're listening to Mighty Marvel Geeks.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
USB microphones and headphones provided by CAD Audio. CAD Audio, expression through innovation.
Forgive the interruption, but I believe this requires your attention.
Meanwhile, at the above-ground underwater suborbital volcano lair...
This is urgent. We need a response team.
We're already putting together the best man. With all due respect, sir, so am I.
I have a plan. It's real!
Mighty Marvel Geeks.
It's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team.
Team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos. We're a time bomb.
Well then, son, you've got a condition.
Your show about all things Marvel with Mike, Kylan, and Eric.
What a bunch of losers. I am Groot.
That I did know.
These people may be isolated, unbalanced, but I believe with the right push, they can be exactly what you need.
Suit up. I'm bringing the party to you.
I have indeed been uploaded, sir. We're online and ready.
And welcome to last show of the year. We will be returning January 7th for our first show of 2015. This is Mighty Marvel Geeks with Kylan, Eric, and Mike. Say hello, guys.
Hello, guys.
Hey, guys.
I knew that was coming. From both of you. Even worse. Big to-do. We have a special guest tonight. We got Ramon Perez coming on, which is a big deal because he's the artist for one of our favorite books. One that is a book that we all, aside from the Star Wars books, is one of the books that we all fight to see who gets to pick it when it comes out. We're talking about the all-new Hawkeye. For us, it's just another show during the holidays. This is your second back-to-back giant-sized issue because we're doing music specials on Sorcerer Radio where you get a chance to listen. Hopefully you've been enjoying the music of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Well, music of the Marvel Universe, be it cartoon theme songs, songs from the movies, TV shows, which I gotta update some stuff. I gotta find the theme from Daredevil and Jessica Jones. And the Jessica Jones theme. My lord.
Yes.
Oh, loving it. And I still gotta get Cosmic Mix Volume 1. I can't find it anywhere.
You can't find Awesome Mix Volume 1?
No, Awesome Mix I have.
You don't have Cosmic Mix?
I don't have Cosmic. Obviously, I have Awesome Mix, or I wouldn't have...
Or...
I think I know what I'm listening to on my way to work tomorrow.
Or... Oh, wait, how'd that get in there?
You just like sticking that in there wherever you can.
I don't think that we've had a show where that song has not come up. I don't think.
What are you trying to say there, Kylan? Do you have some hate for that song?
No, I love the song,
is there hate?
No, I love the song.
Is there Channing Tatum nuclear heat for that song?
No. Actually, it's a happy song that I...
You talked over the bad notes.
It's a happy song, actually. I kind of catch myself kind of singing it to myself when I'm at desk sometimes. I don't know.
So, did I mention yet that this is issue 100?
100.
100.
Oh, man.
100.
Okay,
that's a big one.
I'm feeling aged because between Weeby Geeks and Mighty Marvel Geeks, I have done a total... myself, 200 with the Weeby Geeks episode that released this week, 251 episodes
or
issues combined. In a three-year span.
Wow.
Dude, that's a lot.
So 3 years with Weeby Geeks, now essentially 2 years with this show. We passed the two-year mark. I want to say that was back in November, which, okay. But at some point, it's the milestone show, and this is a milestone show.
This is a milestone.
This is issue 100.
Episode C.
So
there you go.
In Latin, number. Roman numeral.
This is the giant-sized. So who else better to have than Roman Perez? Or Roman Perez.
Roman Perez.
Right, because you're thinking about the sea.
Yes. Ramon Perez. Who better else to have? So, since this is, you're listening to us probably for the first time between Christmas and New Year's, we're going to change things up because we have Ramon on the back end of the show. We're going to do our picks in the beginning. So, I guess to do the normal thing. Wait, no. There is no Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, so I can't do my WWE style. Okay, since it's the last show of the year, and it's the Big 100, so I need to recreate the hype for Big Thunder Mountain Railroad one last time for 2015, since that book came, that series came out.
Why not?
All right. Ow, arm spin. Okay.
I am not twisting your arm.
It's not my knee, man. Okay, so here we go. And for the final time. God, I feel like I'm DX. I feel like we're DX with this.
Yes!
This had just that type of hype with this.
If you had to... I want to hear the DX theme now.
I don't have it. I have it, but I don't have it. Not on the soundboard. Right. But this is just as good. This is the Marvel version of DX. So for the last time for 2015, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with the three in attendance and the thousands listening around the world,
hang on to them hats and glasses, because this here's the wildest ride in the wilderness.
This week's pick comes from Disney Kingdoms. That series that comes out twice a year and which has brought us Secrets of the Weird, Figment 2, soon to be, hopefully, Haunted Mansion. The trade paperback's out. It can only be for one thing, and that's Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. And if you don't like that, I got two words for you.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra!
Oh, how do you not get... Oh, my God, I got goosebumps.
I just heard B.A. Billy Gunn when you said that.
And if you don't like that, we got two words for you.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra!
Oh, that's awesome.
And then thought I heard a door open. Man. Oh, what's the other good one then? The corporation's version.
Hail Hydra.
Yep, pretty much.
Vince McMahon on a good day. So, it is that time of the show that we all come to love and enjoy. We're going to do it with a little twist this week. Usually the last week of the year. I don't have the site pulled up. Who could quickly get to marvel.com/comics/calendar and take a look at what picks there are, or what titles are coming out the week of January 2nd.
January 2nd.
January 2nd. Got it.
You got it. Okay, cool.
Because I know in years past it's been, like last year, it was very slim. I think there was like maybe three or four titles.
I'm actually seeing nothing between December 27th and January 2nd. Nothing.
Okay.
Evil never takes a holiday, but apparently the heroes do.
So what we're going to do different is we're going deep into the archives of Marvel Unlimited. So instead of one Marvel Unlimited pick, we're going to do three. And these are all holiday themed.
Yeah.
So I didn't say Christmas themed, even though they're probably Christmas stories. They're holiday themed because this is the holidays.
Yes, it is.
With New Year's coming, Christmas just passed. Hanukkah was back at the beginning of the month.
Hanukkah.
I wonder if Marvel's going to do a Hanukkah, have one of the titles be a Hanukkah title next year, since Hanukkah starts Christmas Eve next year.
Ooh.
And runs till New Year's Eve.
Well, see, you know, I'm sitting there and there has to be Jewish superheroes out there.
Kitty Pryde.
Exactly.
Magneto.
Prime.
Oh, there you go. See, so...
Magneto. Holocaust survivor.
Yeah. Right. So why wouldn't they? Well, I don't know if Magneto keeps kosher. Just saying, but you know.
Howard the Duck.
That's right. He is.
Wait, he's duckish.
He's duckish.
Funny, he doesn't look duckish.
I wonder if Deadpool's Jewish.
You know, I would say Deadpool is probably whatever suits him at the moment.
Pretty much, yeah. I can't see him putting up with the guilt. I could be wrong, but you know.
No, but he could dish it though.
Oh my gosh! could you imagine being berated by him? No.
So, who would like to go first with their pick for their holiday Marvel Unlimited picks?
Well, I'll go with mine because I discovered a gem that I didn't even know existed. The Marvel Holiday Special for 2005, number one. Hey, look, in the great Marvel tradition comes a brand spanking new holiday special with three premier stories. Industry legend Tom DeFalco of Spider-Girl and Takeshi Miyazawa brings you a riff on A Christmas Carol starring Spider-Man. Rising star Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa of Marvel Knights 4 and Nightcrawler writes two mini holiday tales. Artist Duncan Rouleau draws a story of the many ways the holidays are celebrated by the Fantastic Four, and Roger Cruz illustrates a Merry Mutant Holiday Spectacular. The writer is Jeff Parker and Shannon Garrity and Mike Carey. Penciler is Mike Perkins, Roger Landridge, and Riley Brown.
I love Mike Perkins' work. He's one of my favorite pencilers.
Yeah, and that was this was first published November 30th, 2005. So it's right there on your Marvel Unlimited.
Sweet. What about you, Eric?
Okay, mine goes back all the way, when was this, to June 1988. Uncanny X-Men number 230. Now, this takes place after the Fall of the Mutants, where the X-Men pass through the Siege Perilous and wind up setting up shop in their new secret headquarters in the Australian Outback. And this, of course, they took the town over from the Reavers, who used it basically as their hideout, their headquarters, and their loot vault, which their piles of loot got discovered by Longshot taking a stroll down into their loot vault because he hears voices. Turns out the voices are from the loot, the pieces of loot themselves. It's the psychic vibrations from the loot that has been stolen, calling out to be returned to their rightful owners. Well, unfortunately, there's so many voices shouting at once, it overpowers Longshot and he passes out. When he wakes up, he tells everybody what's going on and he convinces the rest of the X-Men, hey, we've got to return these mountain piles of loot to whoever we can. And so with the help of the Aborigine Mutant Gateway, who, you know, just sits outside the town with his little bonfire and his little bull roarer, he actually helps them by teleporting them to all four corners of the globe and all points in between, returning as much of the loot as they can. And they get back, and Dazzler just says, "Hey, I bet y'all didn't know, we did this all in one night. I bet you didn't know what night this was." And it turns out it was Christmas Eve. So basically, they got to play Santa Claus to, you know, a bunch of people worldwide. And so the name of this issue, the title of this issue, fittingly enough, was "Twas the Night."
Okay. Well, my pick for the week is also from the X-Men, which is a surprise because I'm not a big X-Men person, but I'm definitely going to be reading the books we've picked. But I'm going back a little further. This came out actually April of 1976, the bicentennial year for America.
America.
That was a big to-do. It was a happy birthday, America. it's X-Men number 98. Now, according to Marvel Wiki, where I'm getting the synopsis for this, they say it's X-Men 98. You look for it on Marvel Unlimited under Uncanny X-Men, and it's issue 98. Your writer on this is Chris Claremont. Penciler is Dave Cockrum. Inker is Sam Granger. Colorist is Janice Cohen. Letterer is Joe Rosen. Your editor, Marv Wolfman.
Mm-hmm.
Two of my favorite people on this book. So the synopsis, it's Christmas time and the X-Men are out celebrating in Manhattan. After spending time on Fifth Avenue, they all part ways. Kurt and Peter go introduce themselves to some girls. Moira and Sean go sightseeing. Scott and Jean go to dinner. And Wolverine opts to spend time alone. Okay, nothing new. Normal day. As Scott and Jean arrive at a lavish restaurant to have dinner, they are suddenly attacked by Sentinels.
That's a good way to ruin a dinner.
Despite the two veteran X-Men fighting skills, Jean is captured and Scott sent flying off the building. Only his quick reach for a radio mask prevents him from falling to his death. Can't have that on Christmas. Debris striking the street below alerts Banshee, Wolverine, and Storm of the battle above, and both change into costume and come to Cyclops' aid. I'm not reading this whole synopsis because it's pretty long. Wolverine, Banshee, Jean, and Charles have all been made prisoner of Stephen Lang and his operation called Project Armageddon. As they examine each of the X-Men's mutant natures, they take particular interest in Wolverine's strange readings. As my screen is jumping on me. Lane explains that his operation goal is to wipe out all mutants because they are a menace to society. With Lane busy explaining his plot to Jean, Wolverine extracts his claws and cuts himself free, and then trashes the Sentinels in the room as Lang. God, I can't read tonight. Flees the scene. Wolverine frees Banshee and Jean. They argue about leaving the professor behind. More Sentinels attack, forcing the group to focus on them. As they battle, Banshee uses a sonic scream to clear a path through Project Armageddon's base. So, of course, all of this is happening on Christmas. Notes on this issue is the first. This issue is the first to reveal that Wolverine's claws are part of his body and not a weapon attached to his gloves. And this issue has been reprinted many times. The title of this, the story, is "Merry Christmas, X-Men. The Sentinels have returned." Now, here's some more trivia. This is one of the things I love about Marvel Wiki, as they got these interesting, besides very detailed synopsis, they give like trivia. Colossus is said to be an orphan in the letterer's page, which is incorrect, as his parents were depicted in Giant Size X-Men number 1 and have had subsequent appearances. Somebody didn't do their research.
Hmm.
This is the first issue to show Wolverine without his mask.
Oh!
Dr. Corbo's boat is named Deja Thoris from Edgar Rice Burroughs' Martian novels.
Ah!
Wolverine's unique nature, as mentioned by Stephen Lang, scientist, after examining Wolverine in this issue, is a reference to the originally intended origin for Wolverine. It was originally intended that Wolverine was going to be revealed as a Wolverine mutated into a human being by the High Evolutionary. The concept was eventually scrapped.
Right.
Hmm.
So
I'm glad they scrapped it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are our picks.
Cool.
Uncanny X-Men number 98, X-Men 230, or is that Uncanny? No, Uncanny X-Men 230. And Marvel Holiday Special from 2005. So, we'll tell you what, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Ramon Perez. You're listening to Mighty Marvel Geeks here on the Weeby Geeks Network.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Are you in the market for some new swag? Some comic-themed merch? How about a Sweetwater keychain of your favorite villain or vigilante? Just hop over to the Weeby Geeks site and click the Superhero Stuff link and let the retail therapy commence. Using the link helps support Weeby Geeks because they get a small commission from each sale at no extra cost to you. So get to shopping, and thanks for listening.
And welcome back to Mighty Marvel Geeks here on the We Be Geeks Network, everybody. My name is Eric. I am joined by Michael and Kylan. And we have a special guest with us here on episode 100. 100, century mark. Woohoo!
Issue 100.
Issue 100. I'm sorry. I keep forgetting. Issue, yeah. issue. I have issues with the issue. Can you tell? But our special guest on this special episode is a guy that I have been a fan of for quite a while. When I first became aware of his artwork, he was doing it for Palladium Books, for the Rifts and Heroes Unlimited role-playing games, as well as West End Games with the Star Wars, the old Dice 6 version of the Star Wars role-playing game.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He is the 2012 winner of a Will Eisner Comic Industry Award, is nominated for Best Colorist, and he won for Best Penciler/Inker on Jim Henson's Tale of Sand. Since he has been working for Marvel, though, he's done a lot of Marvel books, actually. He's been in, like, Amazing Spider-Man, Wolverine and the X-Men, Uncanny X-Force, Wolverine and Deadpool, Captain America and the First 13, Captain America, Peggy Carter, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Operation Sin, Agent Carter, John Carter. We go from Peggy Carter to John Carter, The Gods of Mars, Dazzler, War of Kings, Warrior, and currently he is artist on the all-new Hawkeye. Welcome to Mighty Marvel Geeks, Ramon Perez.
Hi there. That's quite the list. Damn.
Told you I'm a fan, man.
Wow, I didn't even know I did that much stuff. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's what Marvel Wiki says, so, you know.
I think that's
blame them if they got you wrong something.
No, I think those are pretty much right. I think some of them might be re-releases with the same content. But, yeah, that's pretty much accurate.
And, of course, continuing on with the Marvel Wiki, how can you not forget Dazzler?
He did
issue one for it. Over on Dark Horse, which you can now find a lot of the Dark Horse Star Wars stuff on Marvel Unlimited. He was on worked on the Clone Wars, on a couple of the Star Wars titles there.
Yeah, I just did a fill-in issue on one of the Clone Wars. Probably the only job I've never inked myself on. And I did like a free comic book day 8-page story, which I penciled and colored. It was starring Kit Fisto, I believe,
yeah,
which was a lot of fun.
So, I mean, so you can see his work on the Dark Horse now, was it Marvel Legends on Marvel Unlimited?
Yep, there's some stuff there too, so. Yeah. No.
So what got you interested in artwork in general, and comics in particular?
Well, I mean, that's funny. I mean, I've been drawing as long as I can remember, like since I was a kid. I would just kind of doodle on, you know, loose scrap pieces of paper, whatever kind of came to mind and was around me. My mother often takes credit. She says she gave me art lessons while she was pregnant with my sister. I'm like, sure, I'll believe you. she had some rudimentary art skills, as did my father, but they're both tradespeople by profession. And But it's something I grew up actually reading more so like Sunday comic strips, like your newspaper strips, so Garfield, Calvin and Hobbes, Hagar the Horrible, Mother Goose and Grimm, Ernest and what was it? I can't remember. Frank and Ernest. And what else? And then like a batch of like European comics that my dad or mother would bring over from Europe whenever we went visiting. So there's an odd mixture. I didn't actually get into your typical Marvel or DC comic kind of stuff till much, much later, when I was around, unless you're grade 6 or 7 in elementary school. Okay. And it was something. But before that, I always used to just do my own kind of based on like the newspaper strip. I would do my own Sunday kind of funny comic books, you know, create characters and have like these little like strips I would do and make anthologies and that sort of thing. So I always loved storytelling with my art. That's something I've always tried to carry through, and whether it was in singular images like in Palladium role playing games or now to Marvel, it's just something. It just came a natural outlet for me, I guess. Maybe because I moved around a lot, too. It was just a good way to... Something I always had with me. I never really thought about it much, to be honest with you.
Who were some of the early inspirations once you decided you wanted to go more towards the comic realm?
Well, when I first started reading... I was a Marvel zombie, I guess, early on. That was that's my go-to. And funny enough, actually, taking things full circle, my first comics I picked up were West Coast Avengers and Solo Avengers, which starred our favorite Hawkeye.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny now that, like, you know, years later, I'm now actually working on Hawkeye, because he's practically one of the first characters that kind of introduced me to the Marvel world, and he's one of the first that I kind of latched onto as, like, this guy is awesome, and, like, you know, he's a guy with a bow and arrow in a world of, you know, super-powered, gamma-irradiated, you know, super beings and stuff, but yet somehow he had this charm about him.
It's that 6 degrees of Hawkeye. Because we
6 degrees of Clint Barton.
Well, no, not 6 degrees of Hawkeye. 6 degrees of West Coast Avengers, because I bring it up quite a bit.
Oh, really?
Completely made Mike's night. By saying that.
I'm a huge West Coast Avengers fan.
Oh my God, it was like good and horrible at the same time. Like, it was just like, do you remember that one issue? It was like, I think it was something that had a catchphrase on it. There's like 4 villains on this cover. Can you find them? And there was like a cactus dude and like a sun guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like some other guy. And I'm like, oh my. I was like, I think around that point, I was like, I really got to stop buying these because this is getting really bad.
Well, we do a book club each month. And the pick for October was West Coast Avengers number 15 from the 85 series.
Oh, I can't remember. What was the topic?
That was the one with Tigra, and they're in hell, and they go to the cat people, and this is where Tigra gets her tail.
What? I think I vaguely recall that, but oh my God, that's ridiculous. Because that would have been the series I was buying, but man.
Yeah, see, I thought the 84 series was the series that was a little weak, which is why it wrapped quickly, and then they relaunched in 85.
Maybe it's the 85 series I'm thinking of then.
And then about halfway through 85, it went from West Coast Avengers to Avengers West Coast.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Like,
that's right.
And to me, that's where I kind of lost it. And it's like, it's like saying New Teen Titans, and then all of a sudden, Tales of Teen Titans while we relaunched New Teen Titans.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, but it was a great, you know, for what it was when I was a kid, it was perfect, I guess. You know?
There was some great stuff.
Yeah, you know, and, like, it had an interesting mix of characters, you know? And back then, you know, like, Iron Man was there, and he was, like, a C-list character back then. You know, you had him and, like, you know, Tigra and, like, Wonder Man and all these. Yeah, it was crazy.
I want to say Hawkeye was more of a star draw than Iron Man was.
Oh, yeah, back then. I would think so, yeah, because he just had his limited series, too.
Yeah.
Not too far before that, where... I can't remember if that's where he married Mockingbird or not. I can't recall. But
I have that trade, and I
think now was actually I've never finished it. It was like I was reading it in Midsummer. Mm-hmm. I think that must be the one where they do get married because they kind of have the whole love hate thing going on, but they haven't married yet. So
yeah. But yeah, around that time, my artistic influences would have been, I was picking up like Arthur Adams, early Mike Mignola, before like he was kind of getting into his Hellboy kind of look. It was more like Cosmic Odyssey and Gotham by Gaslight kind of Mike Mignola.
Yes.
And what else? Kevin Nolan was a huge inspiration. I think. Well, those are probably my top three right there that I can think of offhand. But if more come to mind, I'll pipe up. But those are the top three, anyways, that I kind of like followed religiously. And then it wasn't until years later where I actually started kind of exploring more. So like going, you know, like more towards Kirby and going back even further to like old Alex Raymond. And you know that kind of stuff, Williamson and stuff like that. So it's just like, but those three guys were probably the gateway drugs. And you had some painter guys too, maybe like Kent Williams, who did like Havoc Wolverine Meltdown, along with
that was a good one.
The camera, somebody else, and Duncan Fegredo years later with like Kid Eternity. So yeah, I was just like, yeah, I went from like maybe Chris Bacallo when he did Shade the Changing Man years later as well. So I did Marvel for a long time, then I kind of jumped over to DC Vertigo, and then went back to Marvel for a little bit, or Dark Horse as well when they had Legend imprint. And it's always been those are probably the three guys that kind of got me hooked on and molded my style early on, kind of thing.
Now, being that you're working on Hawkeye now, mm-hmm. And having been a West Coast Avengers fan, and of course that was the original costume, mm-hmm. how much how tempting is it to kind of add some of the old classic elements into the Hawkeye that you have today?
Do you mean costume wise or like personality wise or
a little bit of both?
I can't really do it costume wise because he's, you know, he's pretty much stuck in the garb he's in right now. I was able to play with it a little bit on, which I was happy to do on, I think it was issue 2 or 3 of the first.
I want to say it was 3.
It was the swordsman and like
reflection
in the sword. Even though we don't actually show the costume in the issue, I was like a good opportunity to actually kind of play with that and actually draw it once at least. And then like the future installments in the current series where we kind of like riff off his original costume but kind of mash it up with his new costume a little bit. And character wise, I mean, I'm pretty much following Jeff's template with what he's doing. And I'll throw in some of my own visual cues, I guess. But for the most part, the story is Jeff's baby. So I'm just kind of following the road he's laid out on that part.
So touching on that just a little bit. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, you might be going the same direction. So go ahead.
I've noticed one of the things that is consistent with your illustrations over the mm-hmm. years has been you stick in little, for lack of a better word, Easter eggs.
That's right, yeah.
They're little details that they reward somebody for looking very close. Like there's one in the first issue of Hawkeye where... Mm-hmm. You know, Kate and Clint are basically in this long shot where they're jumping off a balcony, shooting arrows at everybody. And you see all the Hydra guys. They're doing different things. Like you see one Hydra guy has a smartphone out and he's FaceTiming another Hydra guy. And, and another guy is just like, he's munching on a hamburger and just doing fun things like that. And that's one of the things that I've really enjoyed about your illustrations.
Oh, thank you.
Is there any how closely do you and Jeff collaborate on? Hey, I want to throw this in here or just...
Well, Jeff will usually we're both in the same city, so we've met a couple times while working on Hawkeye and discussing this. But unfortunately, we're also very busy, so we can't always touch base on everything. But he'll often in the script put any kind of maybe nods or things he might like thrown in, whether it be a character, positioning or a costume idea or or that sort of thing. Where and then I'll just kind of run with it, and I'll often add my own stuff to kind of entertain myself while working on the series. So like, you know, like the guy eating the sandwich and the FaceTime, that's just me having fun, because I kind of like adding a little bit of levity to superhero comics. Or anything in general. I just figure it's real people doing real things. So it's like, even the Hydra guy is going to be like, you know, having a snack break when he shouldn't or whatever it might be, kind of thing, or, you know. And I did a lot of that too in Wolverine the X-Men as well. Just try to sneak in little elements here and there, or sound effects, or weird little quirky things. I just add a little more character and just nuances to the story. But yeah, so for the most part, like, I'll just throw stuff in while I'm working on it. I don't really ask anybody.
But are there any little details that you're particularly proud of that, you know, you kind of snuck by somebody? Just hey, I can't believe that ever, you know, that got through.
Nothing's really that bad that I've, like, you know, I'm trying to think. There's been a couple over the years. Nothing in particular in Hawkeye, unfortunately. I know in Tale of Sand, I stuck in a Muppet in the background of one shot where I wasn't supposed to. But I figured, hey, it's Jim Henson. It deserves to be one Muppet at least in this book, so... Where I put in, I'll often cameo some of my friends. Like, I did that in Amazing Spider-Man. Half the people in the prelude lineup, or the prelude issue, where it was like issue zero to the Amazing Spider-Man and Learning to Crawl. I threw in like half dozen of my friends in the lineup going to see Spider-Man Box. And, what else? And just like, yeah, maybe riffing off old, like, especially in Spider-Man, actually, I riffed off a lot of old Ditko panels. So I would take original Ditko layouts and kind of add to them or take them from a different angle. So the knowing reader might actually recognize some of the original Ditko stuff, which I played around with. I think I was quite more notorious for it back in my role-playing game days, especially at Palladium Books. Because back then... I really had free rein with Kevin, who ran Palladium Books, who was also the art director, and he pretty much just gave me carte blanche to do whatever I wanted after a while, because he just trusted me, and that was a nice, you know, so I just had fun with everything, and I got to know the world, and I would insert things. I remember at one point there was actually a website devoted to all the Easter eggs, people trying to find every little thing I had thrown in. And certain things lend themselves to that. Like, when you're playing in a sci-fi world like that, where anything goes almost, you can kind of push it a little bit more. It's a little bit harder to do with something a little bit more, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, corporately controlled, like the Marvel Universe. You can't play around as much, or you don't have the freedom, maybe, or you're always under tighter deadlines. Often also don't lend themselves to a lot of playtime, unfortunately. So, yeah. But when you get a genius idea, you'll try to sneak it in every so often, and I try to do that. And like I said, I think I did a little bit more of it in the Wolverine the X-Men and Amazing Spider-Man Learning to Crawl. Oh, and actually I don't know if it's really an Easter egg, but in the John Carter of Mars series, in the first five pages of the original series that I did, he was running around naked, because that's what he did in the actual book. And when I received the script for that series, I really was working Marvel style, where the writer had just given me a paragraph per issue or so, and I just kind of really drew out the whole issue based on my knowledge of the John Carter books and also the notes that he was providing, the writer himself, Sam Humphries. So, like, I remember I just drew them out and inked them and handed them in, sent to my editor, Sana, who was up until recently my editor on Hawkeye as well, and she wrote back in a panic because the book had to go to press. The deadlines were super tight on that book. There was, like, maybe a week per issue, or maybe 10 days.
Wow. Whoa.
And she's like, Ramon, he's naked. He can't be naked. This is an all-ages book. And I'm like, and I was just like, well, I mean, there's nothing showing. I had, like, plants covering any, like, parts that, you know, might be, you know, for censorship. But she's like, no, you can't even allude to it. So I had to go back and digitally and kind of paint in a loincloth on John Carter, which is kind of funny. So that was, like, a funny one, but it's not really an Easter egg. But it's kind of more of a behind the scenes, or if the people, whoever owns the originals of that one, will have a naked John Carter instead of a clothed one.
Well, this kind of brings up a question that I know Eric and I have talked about a little bit off show. Say this month's issue, the December issue of Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
When do you guys start beginning the issue? And usually, what's your production run for?
Well, it depends. I mean, like, if you're... When I started the first run of Hawkeye, I had a bit of lead time. It was, like, maybe 2-3 months, maybe 2 months or so. But I was juggling other work at the time. But as I started on the series, the painted pages ended up taking so much longer, where by the end of issue... By the time issue 5 of the original series was coming out, I was literally handing in the book probably a week or two before it hit the shelves, basically. Because it was just the painted work, and plus I was also coloring the painted pages as well. So just the workload was just not lending itself to keeping things on time. So I think the series kind of suffered a little bit where we were like maybe 1 or 2 weeks behind on delivery on some of the issues. But now with the current series, there was like a bit of a gap with the relaunch, and I'm not doing the painted work for the first 3 issues because we're going into the flash forwards. So I'm actually already handed in issue 3, and issue 1 I believe came out, what, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago now? I can't remember. So usually when you're on the ball, you're usually about 3 months ahead of schedule. But the majority of my work somehow, like when I worked on Amazing Spider-Man, and that book was so tight to deadline because it started late due to position changeovers within the company. And I was supposed to start out like January, and I ended up starting in like March or something. And the book was out in like April, and I was just like, every issue of that book was just a race against time trying to get it out on within the allotted scheduled release date kind of thing. So, you know, when things are good, you got a bit of wiggle room, and you know, sometimes you'll eat it up and then you can catch up, but other times, yeah, you're just under the gun and racing the printer's clock, so to speak. So okay. I mean, but ideally Marvel usually, and DC as well, they usually try to work in a 3-month buffer zone on series when they start, so the artist usually has around I think 4 to 6 weeks to do a book.
Okay. So at this point in time, and I ideally, you're working on the March issue of Hawkeye.
Yeah, I'm working on issue. I'm working on issue 4 right now. I'm not exactly sure when that comes out, but I know that sounds about right, maybe or so. Okay. And I'm doing the cover to issue 6 right now, and working on the interiors to issue 4. So yeah, it's this part. But then now I'm going back into the painted sequences, so I'm probably going to slow down a little bit. But luckily, I got the buffer ahead of me already to take care of that. Hopefully.
Now you're saying you're working on the cover for 6. How much of how much has Marvel said? You know, keep going with the AHA. Style with the covers, yeah.
I mean, we've mixed it up a little bit on... I usually try to keep it... I like the designy element of the AHA covers, and that's something I kind of want to continue, keep the Hawkeye covers more unique rather than your typical superhero kind of narrative covers. I want to do a little bit more iconic, or... So we've played around. I mean, the first issue, I guess we had the kind of more graphic face. I mean, we jump around, so it really depends on what the context of the issue is. Like, we get quite graphic with issue 5. The issue 5 cover is very, very simple and iconic looking, and we do a little bit of that with the issue 6 as well, but I bring a bit of a visual narrative into the background. So really, that really just depends on the cover. That's whatever story element we want to convey. If I can convey it simply and succinctly in like a simple image, then I will, but if it needs more of a narrative cover, then we'll move it that way, kind of thing. The other issue just came out. I think the cover was released recently. The Kate cover with her flashback and reflected in a pool of water was her older self, kind of thing. So I mean, until we tried, that was a little bit more narrative, more fully rendered, and then we'll jump to a quick iconic cover the next issue, kind of thing. So really, like I said, depends on the issue's content.
I actually on the. So I would say sort of Hawkeye related. We're going back to his costume. Mm-hmm. How much of a role do you have in? And let's say if somebody decides, we need to change his costume again, because I can't tell you how many costume changes I've gone through in my comic reading history. But
yeah,
is that something that you come up with? Like, hey, I think we need to update his look, or maybe we need to go a little bit more classic, or does that come from somebody else, and it's up to you to design that?
Yeah, I would say that.
would come from up above. They decide if they want to go more, you know, whatever direction. Like, unless a series is being relaunched and you're hired in particular to design a character for that series or redesign an existing character. Like, when I worked on Learning to Crawl, I designed, oh my God, I'm blanking on the character's name now.
Miles Morales?
Yeah, his alter ego. What was his name? He was like oh man, I'm terrible. I worked on that
Peter
book
Parker?
For half a year. No, the actual the villain from the Learning to Crawl. He had the sound powers. And I'm completely blanking on the villain's name right now.
Not Mysterio?
No, not Mysterio. He was like an all new character for the miniseries.
Oh.
And wow, I suck.
Had one job, dude.
I know, man.
Clash.
Yeah, that's it. Clash, exactly. So that he was nothing but just like an idea that Dan Slott had, and he had sound powers, and that was about it. He had speakers in his gloves, and he could shoot sound, maybe one in his chest, I think, or something.
Okay.
And basically, he said, "Can you design him and like make him feel like he came from the Ditko era?" So. I did up a bunch of sketches, I think two or three different versions, all based around an idea that kind of came to me. Like, usually I get something that works up in my head, like, right away when I'm thinking of a character, and we actually end up going with my very first interpretation of what I wanted to do, with a slight adjustment to, I think, like, the eyes on the max, that was about it, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, there's a little back and forth between Dan, myself, and the editor on color schemes, and then I also added some powers to him. Like I said, why don't we put speakers in his boots? That way we can make him fly. You can kind of fight Spider-Man up in the air as well. So I mean, there was like, so in that element, since we were launching something new and different, that there was a bit of back and forth between everybody. But if it was like in, for example, with Hawkeye, if it was, it was up to them to decide whether we were going to take him back to his original costume or keep him in the costume that was, you know, in the previous run. And that pretty much came down from up high saying, yeah, we're going to keep him in the black shirt with the, you know, the purple V arrow kind of, image on his chest. And yeah, so I pretty much just followed suit. But, usually if it's something that it's premiering a new series or something, yeah, they'll definitely approach the artist and there'll be like a discourse back and forth between the writer and the editor staff kind of thing.
So if you had this brilliant idea to say, hey, I want to put Clint in a kimono,
I would talk to Jeff and give me a kimono story. Yeah.
Because that would be funny as all get out to see.
wasn't he in kind of, when you first see him, isn't he in kind of a kilt kind of thing? But that was like back in the 60s, the first time you see him.
Oh, Hawkeye. Yeah, he did have some sort of weird bare leg outfit at one point. I don't think it was his first costume.
It wasn't the first one. But it was only like for one or two issues. Like, it was really short-lived. I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's probably they're trying to like push the envelope, and probably the readership was like, what the hell are you doing? Put some pants back on that archer. Come on. We don't need to see no arrows. Come on. It's like...
Keep the arrows in the quiver there, Barton.
Yeah. Well, that's their job, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back to the new Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And the painted pages, which I think it's brilliant. And I love the dual styles to where you do the flashbacks in painterly fashion. Whose idea was that? Was that yours? Was that Jeff's? Was it,
did
it come down
me.
From above?
That was pretty much me. It's when I read the script, I kind of looked at it and I talked to the editor, Sana, at the time. I'm like, listen, I like this. And the past and present allows me to, and at that time I knew we were going to go into the future as well. And I said, do you mind if I jump around stylistically to better delineate the story? Like, so people don't have to figure out, oh, is this past or present? They'll immediately know based on the style and like how I decide to tackle it. And yeah, so that was pretty much my decision. I wanted to do with the painted just to give it more of a kind of an ethereal, dreamy, kind of hazy memory quality. Like when you're thinking back, you never really think back clearly on things. You know, it's always kind of like a washed out image in the back of your head. And I want to kind of try to convey that through the flashbacks in the comic book as well. And then I kind of wanted to keep them more monotone with the color palette because it was just kind of just like a simplified, like, kind of like Hawkeye's, this is Hawkeye's memories and purples and hues thereof kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like, I did it in Tale of Sand. I've done it a few other places here and there. And it's just a fun way to kind of keep things interesting for myself as well when you're doing a run of a book for over 100 issues or something like that. It's kind of nice just to play around a little bit, see what you can do artistically and see where you can go with it.
So is this you saying that you're going to be on Hawkeye for 100 issues?
Sorry, I meant 100 pages. Did I say 100 issues? I meant 100 pages.
We're totally cool with you being on Hawkeye for 100 issues.
Yeah, it works.
I don't think
me.
I've ever done 100. Hawkeye will be my longest run on any series, and it's already been a feat because I'm just not used to it. I prefer short little mini series or 4 or 5 issues, and it allows me to kind of pause after I'm done and kind of breathe a little bit. I've often said I'm not the ongoing guy. I'm no artist that's going to be on a series for 2 or 3 years. It's just I'm not wired that way. I can't do it.
Now, still staying on Hawkeye, of course, this is Mighty Marvel Geeks with Raymond Perez as our guest tonight. If Marvel came to you and said, after issue 8, mm-hmm. you're allowed to recreate the costume or give it your own flair, mm-hmm. and you could change up the costume, what would you do?
To be honest, I don't know. I mean, like, we've gotten super very kind of clean military with his look right now. It's like almost like a SWAT guy. And I know a lot of people have clamored for the return of his classic, you know, masked costume. So
I could do without the mask.
Yeah, I mean, I might try to find a happy in between. I'm not a big fan of the sunglasses that he wears. I don't think I've ever actually drawn them in them in my entire run. So I think I would probably just try to find a happy medium. I'd be like, where can I take elements of the superheroic costume and combine them with the modern sensibilities of his current costume? Kind of like almost like the Ultimate Captain America. You know, he had that element where it's like, okay, this is gear. You can tell he's wearing gear,
right.
not like a slip-on kind of balaclava with little wings attached to the side of its head kind of thing, right?
Right.
So, and I find a lot of costumes are going more that way anyways with series. Like, they're looking more utilitarian and more, like, how would this be made in real life rather than, like, I'm wearing a pajama with big boots and super gloves and, you know, that's that kind of thing.
Yeah, I didn't mind the top or the tunic part of mm-hmm. the West Coast Avengers look to Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought that was kind of practical and, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm still seeing little shades of it currently a little bit of the flare below the belt.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like I probably, like I said, I would probably combine something. I'd be like, hey, how can I utilize? And also, like, if I were to do it, like, why is he doing it? Like, what, why is it he, like, the choices of where he's going to make this work? Like, maybe does he have, like, pouches on the tunic that hold different arrowheads instead of having them, you know, he pulls out a blank arrow, pops on an arrowhead or something like that. Like, because he's not going to know which arrow is going to be the one in the back, right? So, you know, or like, you know, something like that. Like, they're trying to find a reasoning behind the choices if he's actually going to go that route and bring back elements of that original costume. So it really just be, you know, and maybe not the mask. Like you said, maybe not do the mask because the mask was like a product of the era. It's very much like, hey, it's like kind of a Wolverine mask because he's popular and we're going to riff it that way and, you know. So, but yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I would, it'd definitely be fun anyways to see what I can come up with. And I'm also a big proponent of the 80s school of superhero costumes. Like, I love simple, clean designs.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the like early X-Men stuff was like that after, what, issue 100 was it? Or whatever, you know, like the Nightcrawler costume, the Wolverine costume, like the Colossus, like very clean designs. And I find like a lot of designs nowadays are, while they look pretty in one image, they're a pain to draw repeatedly because there's so much detailing on them.
Right.
That it's kind of like a rule of animation almost. Keep it simple so you can make it readable from different angles really quickly and easily and convey simple, you know, nice silhouette and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I just try to bring back some elements of that.
I wish NHL goaltenders would do the same thing with their goalie masks. Simpler, but Yeah, nice design, but simple, not so complex. Yeah, yeah. You're sitting going, what is that?
Like maybe a bullseye or something, you know, who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, to piggyback kind of on what Mike was asking, say Marvel comes down to you and says, okay, after issue 8 or issue 10, you could take a break. You can mm-hmm. move on to a different character.
Yeah.
Do on to a different title. After Hawkeye, who would be the character that you would want to tackle most?
Let's see. I'll probably give people answers they don't want to hear. I'm a strange bird when it comes to I like really obscure characters, like B-list and C-list characters.
Yeah.
Because you can have more fun with them. So 90% of the editorial staff, for example, at Marvel knows that I would love to do a Starjammers series.
Dude.
I saw you doing a sketch of them on your Instagram, and it's... Did I see Corsair with a 70s kind of theme going?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, why not?
Now you just made Eric's night.
You know, I'm just like, and I've actually pitched them on a series once or twice already, but they're like, no one's going to want to read this.
I would.
Like, you know, but yeah, so like really obscure characters. Like, I would like to be like, can we resurrect like Mimic or like Angar the Screamer or, you know, give some bizarre, like take an old character that's like just drowning in obscurity, that's kind of useless, but bring him back, kind of, which was like the modus operandi of like Vertigo when it first started out. You took these, right. You know, Shade the Changing Man was like this obscure character that was kind of reinvented and made something, you know, interesting. And so I think that's where, like, if I was actually given free reign, that would be my my treat to myself, would be doing something like that. Like, it's not like, I mean, I've had the joy already working on X-Men and Spider-Man, and so I've been lucky in that regard. I've gotten to draw a lot of my childhood, I guess, favorites, if you will. So I'm not really looking to jump on any other characters off the bat that kind of are screaming out to me. So I'll be really seeing what I could do with the Marvel library of characters and kind of, you know, playing around with it, or, you know, bringing that class, or maybe doing like an Alpha Flight or something. I don't know. Go Canadian, you know.
You know, I'd actually like to see you doing Alpha Flight.
You know. So yeah, that's probably the route I would go. I'd ask them, like, what's available, what can I play with, and I would really love to go into the writing realm and kind of, you know, write and draw something for Marvel. So, but I you know, I'm not sure that would ever happen, because they kind of, that's a longer road to travel. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I can't think of anything, like any like big characters. No one really comes to mind. Like, even when I was young and collecting comics, I never collected Fantastic Four, I never collected Captain America or Batman or something, like none of these main titles like of the companies. I always collected these weird other like Alpha Flight or West Coast Avengers or I'm trying to figure out like what else.
Cloak and Dagger.
Oh yeah, Cloak and Dagger. That would be great, actually. I'd love to work on. I know I saw a reboot image of them recently, whether they're reverse colored or something. But yeah, something like that, like Cloak and Dagger, or, you know, find some like, you know, weird character that was kind of maybe buried in an issue of Marvel Fanfare, or, you know, Dominic Fortune. That'd be awesome.
That would just do my geek heart proud to see.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And my love of Pulp.
Yeah, you know. Yes. Well, actually, I would also love to do The Thing, a series starting The Thing. So, you know,
they station him off in space, though.
Yeah, I know. He's in Guardians of the Galaxy, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, all right.
I know. I'm like, and I'm okay with it. I'm glad he's getting some love, but yeah. I think it'd be cool. I think it's time for a Thing solo series.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of, like, I remember buying a few here and there when I was a kid, and, you know, he also, or like Doctor Strange actually would be a fun one, too.
Yeah.
But now, Bacallo and Aaron are doing a nice run on that right now, so, you know, they got that taken care of. So.
I was about to say Power Man and Iron Fist, but they're Avengers now, so...
Yeah, that's another series I collected when I was a kid, like that, and Defenders, I collected that as well.
Yes.
And, you know, it's all these, like, just bizarre, like, you have all these, like, you know, Gargoyle and, you know, Valkyrie on a team. Yeah.
And, well, Hellcat's getting a book, but it's going to be completely different.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I got to talk to the Marvel editorial staff and see what's possible.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, maybe we could see a return of Cloak and Dagger.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I think they're great characters. Yeah.
I mean, didn't Cloak and Dagger show up in Ultimate Spider-Man?
I think they did.
I was surprised. I was pleasantly surprised at that.
Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised to see White Tiger get it like a recurring role.
Yeah, White Tiger got some love.
Yeah.
I think what's happening now, I think a lot of the people who are now creatives on Marvel, like writers and artists, grew up reading these characters. They're like, I want to bring this guy back, you know? I want to bring back Mimic. I want to bring back, you know, Cloak and Dagger, you know, whatever it might be.
Well, when they made Power Man and Iron Fist, like regular characters on Ultimate Spider-Man, I got the goosebumps.
Yeah.
And I was okay that they changed the story. Mm-hmm. I get it. You can't have a 16-year-old sent off to jail for a crime he didn't commit. I understand that, but
it'd be juvie hall, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm serious. I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. I never pictured Danny Rand as a surfer dude, but that's okay.
But when you think about it, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, he's Zen dude. So okay, all right, that's cool.
Nice.
Hey, I know that dude.
Dude, we went to Shalom together, man.
Oh my gosh.
Mr. Hand, you want some pizza and a little Zen meditation?
Oh boy.
Man, keep that Iron Fist of yours out of the dip, man. Last time you did it, you flash fried it and it tasted terrible.
Hey, Danny, no shirt, no Zen, no service.
Stop bogarting all the chi, man.
Oh, man.
This is almost like Fear and Loathing in Kunlun. That may be our show title right there.
Oh, I want that t-shirt.
That'd be awesome. Sign me up too.
Okay, earlier on in the show you mentioned you know, having to go digital to cover up John Carter's naughty bits, but
yep.
How much do you do digital versus old-fashioned pen and ink? And do you have a preference as to either one?
Well, right now, for example, the current Hawkeye series is a good example. Issue number one of Hawkeye, not the current issue, but the first launch that I did,
right?
That issue was all traditional. But then by issue two, because of the painted elements of issue one, I started falling behind on the existing schedule. So to expedite my workload, I actually took the present day elements, and from issue two onward, they became digital. And the painted elements were still traditional kind of thing. And on the current run of the current series, all the present day, once again, is still digital. And the flashbacks and flash forwards are traditional. So it really comes down to just like what I can do within my schedule. Like, I love old school. Like, I love working with a brush or a quill. Like, Spider-Man was all traditional. I tend to pencil all my issues or art now digitally, just because it allows me a lot of freedom to, you know, change things up if I need to, whether it's like resize a character or move a panel over or whatnot. There's a certain freedom with that you can't get with traditional penciling, because you have to basically erase and re-pencil, or, you know, or ink it and then just readjust it later after you scan it. So for the most part, all my layouts and pencils are digital now, and then the actual inks will usually depend on schedule and you know, what I want to achieve with the look of the book. So with, like, for example, with Learning to Crawl, I did that all in quill because I wanted to kind of emulate that kind of rough line that Ditko had, and he inked with a quill. And Wolverine the X-Men was done with brush, because I kind of wanted that clean traditional superhero look. And with the Hawkeye stuff, because I'm doing a bit of a chunkier line on the present day stuff, I was able to switch it quite easily to digital without anybody, I think, really noticing. So I mean, the preference for me is traditional, but I don't mind digital. It's a useful tool to have, and I'm just as good as when I do doing it, whether it be digital or traditional. Like, I can kind of emulate both with either tool kind of thing. So but ideally, I like stepping away from the computer monitor and actually inking on paper, but sometimes just time doesn't allow it. So for the most part, I go digital on a lot of current stuff with Hawkeye. But, you know, the next series, whatever I do, maybe I won't. It'll really depend on the look and feel I want of the book.
Okay. Now, yeah. Speaking of books, what would you consider your top three titles from Marvel that you've got to read every month?
Oh, I am so behind on what's currently happening. I tend to buy my stuff in a trade 6 months after the fact.
So this is almost a perfect question then. To get caught up, what are, you know, being so far behind, what are the three titles that...
The stuff I was reading most recently, Marvel-wise, was I was buying in the trades was the new X-Men and Guardians of the Galaxy were the two I was reading. But I mean, I haven't picked up a new trade for those in probably since before the summer. Like the problem is the comic shop right by where my studio was closed down. So now I have to travel to go to the comic shop. So now it's like, oh, I go once every like 3 or 4 months to the comic shop and just buy a whole swath of stuff. And then I kind of catch up and then I kind of disappear for a while, continue working. What else did I buy Marvel-wise recently that I kind of picked up that I liked? I started reading the new Captain America relaunch because that was me more so. Like, I tend to follow artists a lot, so I'm a big fan of Eminem's work. So, like, usually wherever Eminem will jump, I'll check out. So I checked out his Star Wars work as well. And
Star Wars stuff is amazing.
Oh yeah, I mean that the guy is like he knows the stuff inside out, so he's just like the perfect match for that book. What else? And I mean, I'm trying to think what else. I'll usually follow like artists and writers, so like Eminem or writer wise, I like, you know, Latour or Jason Aaron. I've been picking up the Bacallo. Probably the most recently, actually, was the Bacallo Aaron Doctor Strange that I've been picking up. I like in floppy form. I like when I was at the store the other day, I picked up a few of the issues, and that caught my eye, kind of thing. I think that's about it for current stuff. I'm trying to picture in my head. So if I was at my studio, I'd just go through my pile, but I don't. I'm at home right now, so. Here it's all just trade paperbacks and hardcovers that I picked up lately, but some of them aren't Marvel what I picked up lately, so
now,
can't be talking about those.
You were talking getting the floppy issues. Being an audio guy myself, I've almost made the comparison going analog or digital, so to speak. Do you get into the digital comics? You know, like the company, like Comicsology or Farrago.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. I haven't explored Farrago, but I've been part of the Marvel Unlimited, whatever it's called. I have an account there, and so that actually, when I have time, I'll kind of play a little bit of catch up. But like I said, I'm usually years behind. So I just recently read the entire Chris Samnee Thor run, and then what else was I reading there recently? Oh, I went back and reread like a lot of old early X-Men issues from like 1 to 100 kind of thing, which I never read because like when I was a kid, I started reading classic X-Men. So I read, like, you know, from issue whatever it was, a 100 on or 90 on, right. Whatever it was. So, I mean, so I've actually don't mind. It's actually opened up me reading a lot more comics than I normally do because usually I'm so busy working, I don't really have a lot of time to sit down and kind of just go through a lot of floppies or figure out what's good or what's bad. So by, you know, going on the digital platform, I can kind of just peruse and see what I like, and then if I come across something I really like, I'll either go buy it in trade format or the floppies if it's something current kind of thing. You know?
Okay.
But I find even when I buy floppies, I'll buy like 2 or 3 or 4, and then I actually sit down to read them. So I'm like, why don't I just buy the trade and just like because by the time my schedule allows me to actually read some comics, like a whole series has happened already. So
okay,
yeah.
Then I guess my next question is, with Marvel Unlimited, What's that one guilty pleasure book that you keep going back to that you might be embarrassed that you go back to?
I'm quite proud of everything I read. I think one of my favorite books that I've reread numerous times from Marvel is Next Wave. I think it was 8 issues in altogether. I can't remember offhand, but was it Warren Ellis and Immonen doing that? And I just love that. I've read that series like numerous times. Probably one of my favorite things that Marvel's put out in the past decade. Because it's self-contained. I don't need to know anything else about the rest of the Marvel universe, what's going on. It's out of continuity. Like, it just, for me, it had everything. I had giant monsters and robots and superheroes, so it had everything. And guilty pleasure wise, I don't have stuff I probably reread outside of Next Wave that I can think of offhand, but I'll often start digging on obscure characters and I'll just start reading really oddball issues. Like, for a while I started reading all the backups from the classic X-Men series that they had, just because they were like these weird one-off 8-page stories about like, oh, here's Kurt Wagner's origin, or here's like how the Angel met so-and-so, or, you know, whatever it might be, whatever like oddball thing they were doing that month, or hunting down old series that maybe I lost or like I sold years ago and in from my collection, and you know, so like maybe like hunting down old like Howard the Duck or you know what I mean? Just like bizarre oddball stuff, or just like, you know, usually when I'm working on a book or pitching something, I'll often research a lot too. So like I'll like, you know, start researching characters and find out what, you know, they're doing currently or have in the past or whatnot. So, yeah, I'm always like digging and trying to find like silly things. So like, probably just like looking at old school stuff from like mid 80s back is probably what my guilty pleasure is, but nothing really specific.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I should have asked this question much earlier in our discussion, but how did you get on with Marvel?
How did I get on? Like start working with them?
Yeah, start
working with them. Just like any artist, hawking my portfolio around for so long. The funny thing is, a lot of my first jobs for Marvel came about two different ways. There was the one route where I inked NYX, and I then did a fill-in on the issue one of Dazzler, where the artist on that couldn't finish the entire issue. So the editor, who was the same editor who did the second NYX series, which I inked, he called me up and asked me if I could do the interior, the middle missing pages that the artist couldn't finish on time. So that was kind of like one way, ingratiating myself in through kind of just being the last minute guy that could call up and know I could hit the deadline kind of thing. And then the other way was with my first two, I guess, full books for Marvel were the Captain America and the First 13 with Peggy Carter and the Deadpool team up. So both those came about was Catherine Immonen, who wrote the First 13. I've known her for years. I know Stuart as well. And we were chatting one day. I'm like, hey, I'd love to work with you. If something ever comes up, give me a shout. So basically, and then with Deadpool, it was Scotty Young who wrote that, who was a big fan of Butternut Squash when I was doing that online. And we kind of became friends. And he was like, I'd love to get you to draw something I write for Marvel. I was like, yeah, sure. Just give me a call. So like both those books came up. Like the editors didn't know who I was, but they were like, yeah, Catherine wants you to draw this. And I don't know who you are, but can I see a portfolio or something? So like, you know, I sent them in and it was actually kind of funny. I think especially with the Deadpool team up, I think once I sent in my inked pages, the editor was like, oh shit, you can draw, you know, kind of thing. Like, it's just like, it was kind of funny. Like the reaction went from like, I don't know who this guy is and I'm just helping out, like, you know, Scotty Young, to like, oh, okay, this is going to be a good looking book kind of thing. So it was a lot of fun. And that's kind of like the position I held at Marvel, just doing one-offs for the most part, till I did Tale of Sand. And with all the Eisner's Tale of Sand one, suddenly all the people who, you know, doors I was knocking on suddenly began answering their doors and, you know, were calling me up to do, you know, runs on books. And like Marvel was very, you know, quickly gave me a shout saying, hey, do you want to work on, before I did Wolverine the X-Men, actually, I did the John Carter series, because the editor of that book was the ex-girlfriend of the editor on my Tale of Sand book, and he recommended me. She was looking for an artist that could do a book really, really fast because the book was behind deadline, and my editor on Tale of Sand was like, this guy's fast and he's good, so we got put in contact, we became friends, and yeah, I did that book for her, and that kind of began, and by the time I was finishing that, that's when Tale of Sand won all the awards, and then Marvel called me up to do Wolverine the X-Men, and then all the other books that followed that kind of thing. So yeah, it was kind of like a long climb, but you know, it's been a fun ride.
Now, with all the various coverage you've done, mm-hmm. do you have a favorite?
Good question. I'm trying to think. I actually quite enjoyed doing a couple of the X-Force covers I did, because I got to do some nice fun stuff with some cheesy 80s like or 90s like Cable and like Strike and that kind of stuff. Trying to think what else was there. Marvel-wise, I did the X-Force, and I did the Wolverine and the X-Men covers. I'm trying to think what else I've done for Marvel. Well, the Hawkeye covers. I mean, I a few of the Hawkeye ones are my favorite. Like, the issue number one I did for the first series. Actually, the issue number one for the second series I quite like, too.
Yeah.
Kind of just love different ones for different reasons, but yeah, those are probably like the more recent ones. I guess those are probably my two favorite standouts. But yeah, if I were to go a little bit farther back, I would say some of the X-Force ones were just kind of fun to do, because a lot of those characters I read when I was collecting comics in the 90s, so it was kind of fun to, like, how would I draw Strife? How would I take Rob Liefeld's design and kind of make it like workable kind of thing. Those were kind of fun, especially the one, I think one of my favorites is like the Strife, I can't remember his name, with Strife with all the heroes reflected in his mask.
Oh yeah.
And then the other one of Cable with what's his name, I can't remember his name now, the big dude from the future.
Bishop?
Yeah, Bishop. With Bishop, like, in his, like, the gun sights kind of thing. That was, like, okay, so, yeah. I mean, there's so much fun you can have with a lot of these different characters. So, like, I would love to get doing, I'd love to start tapping Marvel to do more variant covers, because I think you'd have a lot more fun with those, too.
So, back in November, we interviewed Michael Cho, who, you know, in February he's got 21 variant covers coming out.
Yeah,
is that something you would love to tackle?
That'd be a lot of fun. I mean, variants is a great way to get to do a lot of different characters that you normally wouldn't get a chance to do, and you can usually pull off something. I mean, depending what the theme is, pull off something different and unique, kind of thing. Like, I was recently at the DC offices, and they were showing me all the variants for, like, the Warner Brothers variants with, like, all the heroes interacting with the Warner Brothers cartoons kind of thing. And then they showed me all the DK3 variants. And what was the other one? I think it was, like, Monsters or something variants or something. And I was like, wow, these are a lot of fun, because you get to, like, you know, and, like, or Scotty Young's, like, baby variants. Like, you can have so much fun with a lot of these different things. So, yeah, I would definitely be in on something like that. If there was, like, an event or something that, you know, just do a whole slew of, like, you know, 2 or 3 months worth of variants, or, like, 30 issues or 50 issues of variants, that'd be amazing. That'd be a joy to do.
Okay.
Good deal. I have a question about I'm going off the Marvel reservation here for just a moment. The first sequential art that I remember seeing from you, mm-hmm. is the Riffs miniseries Machinations of Doom.
Yep.
If Marvel came to you and said, hey, we worked out with Kevin, we want to do kind of like a limited series or ongoing series with these characters, would you be interested?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, like, I grew up on, like, as much as I grew up reading Marvel and superhero comics, my favorite thing is science fiction. Like, that's what I grew up on. Like, I'm a Star Wars kid, Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers, all that 70s sci-fi and 80s sci-fi. That's what I grew up on.
Space 1999.
Like, yeah. And, like, you know, Mad Max and like all that kind of stuff as well, like the gritty post-apocalyptic. So like it's just, you know, and there's so much you can draw in that series, like from magic users to, you know, robots to dragon. Like there's such a plethora of fun things to tackle that, yeah, I'd definitely be into.
Including chimpanzee scientists. Yeah,
exactly. Like, I mean, it's like, why not? Like, it's like you can draw everything, like anything goes kind of thing. That's what I loved about working in that universe. Like, and you know, Kevin created a universe. He's like, I want something with magic and robots and tech and, like, you know, low tech, high tech, everything. It's just like, why not? So, yeah, I would definitely be into it. Yeah, for sure.
Go ahead.
You can do it. You can say whatever,
like,
you want.
We're waiting for charades. It's kind of like first word sounds like.
And here we go.
It feels like we're all going to ask the same question. It's like, Well, okay. I have a. Okay, because I kind of dovetailing on the whole sci-fi, mm-hmm. the freedom that you get with sci-fi. Lately, I've been on, well, lately meaning like last, I don't know, 10 years.
Yeah. That's pretty lately. Lately, I mean just since 2000.
Just a short period of time.
Just a short period of time. Yeah. I've really been a big fan of like the old pulp stuff. So, and actually, I'm currently reading. And I'm about to admit I don't read strictly Marvel stuff.
Uh-oh, it happens.
It's okay. I'm reading the Dynamite Flash Gordon series.
Oh, okay. Such a great series.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's amazing. And I'm reading this, and, you know, it's like you say, you know, you get that, you know, there's that bit of modern, mm-hmm. you know, modern 21st century Earth that we know. But then he's on Mongo, and, you know, when he's in Mingo City, yeah, it's high tech, but then everywhere else, you know, it's low tech, and then you have, okay, they kind of did away with the whole magic thing, but, you know, mm-hmm. you almost have like a techno wizardry kind of thing going on. So I guess to kind of go on that, is that something that you wish to see more of that, especially as it seems like the pulp movement is starting to move out of just books. You're starting to see it in some comics now, and that sort of starting to see those elements. Are you glad to see that?
Oh, definitely. I think I love that pulp stuff. Like, I read a lot of that. Actually, currently I'm reading a lot of Edgar Rice Burroughs right now.
Yeah.
I'm reading his the Venus series, where he kind of like, it's a weird mashup of like Tarzan and John Carter. No, I love that kind of stuff. And when I actually pitched Starjammers, I want to do a pulp series at Marvel. Like, I want to, these are perfect characters for that. Let's take pirating and swashbuckling and take it into outer space. You can have your serious moments, you can have your dark moments, but overall, it's like a pulp story. And I would love to do something like that. Like, just bring it back. Because I think, and that's kind of what I did when I did the John Carter thing for Marvel as well. Like, I kept it, like, you know, there's some dark moments, but we kept it tongue in cheek as well. You know, you had fun sci-fi, you had some high tech, you had some low tech. And you know, the greatest compliment I had on that series from a lot of reviews was that people were just saying it's fun. It's just fun to read. It's like kinetic. It's fun. And that's why I kind of like, I think comics is missing a lot of, kind of just visually fun, kind of rides, I guess, visual rides, I guess. It's like the comics have become, in my opinion, like, very verbose or very talkative, and it's great. Like, I read a lot of great talky comics, but like every so often I just want to see some light kind of fun action that, you know, it just, you know, like an old Errol Flynn movie or something, you know what I mean? It's just like, just have fun with it, you know. And I would love to kind of bring that back to you know. And so if I can't do it at Marvel, I'll just do it somewhere else. But, you know, that's, you know, the beauty of what we do now is, like, you have somebody create your own projects as well, you know. So I always usually have a few things cooking on the side, and you know, and that's actually one of the things I'm working on right now, is like a pulp sci-fi thing on the side of, you know, to hopefully release next summer.
Really?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's
my,
like,
ears perk up. What?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, it's just like, you know, you got one thing over here, I got one foot in this door, one, you know, another over here, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, you know, there's always, I would love to have that element of comics kind of become more prevalent. And, you know, and I think that's actually what you had a lot of back in the 80s and 70s. Well, maybe not 70s, but 80s, definitely. And it kind of got really serious in the 90s and dark,
yeah,
like, talky. And I think right now we're in very much the era of the writer still, which is, you know, great. But I think the best comics come from a very collaborative writer-artist team or the cartoonist, which is, you know, writing and drawing his own stuff kind of thing.
Right.
You're going to, you know, in a medium that's very visual, there's, you know, let's bring back some of that visual, you know, kind of splendor that we can pull off and have fun with, kind of thing.
Well, it's like I've been reading some of the essential collections, and mm-hmm. so I went back and did that with Luke Cage and Iron Fist, and it's something I noticed, and something that Eric pointed out in your work, and I think that's really cool, is even as I'm reading, I'm kind of drawn to see what's going on in the background, and you will see some guy walking down the street with a big old boombox, and some song is playing, and there's this old lady's giving him a dirty look, and
yeah, yeah.
And there's a couple of guys, you know, just a couple of feet from him breakdancing.
That's awesome.
And, you know, and you get that feel of real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
when,
for sure.
When you see that, it's not just a Spidey is kicking Doc Ock in the face. You know, okay, yeah, great. But I love seeing what's going on in the background, and I love that, you know, that, you know, when an artist, you know, uses the whole space in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, know? I mean, it's great when you can do stories like that that kind of lend themselves to that as well. Like, where you can like look in the background, and you see life going on, which is which is something I like to bring to the table when I have the time. Or, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, the story doesn't lend itself. Like, if you have two characters in the Arctic, not much is going to be going on. Maybe some penguins having some fun in the background, or, you know, whatever, but...
A snowball.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Polar bear club.
Yeah.
Penguins having snowball fights. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so, I mean, but yeah, when I can, and, like, if time permits, it's like, you know, the Wolverine and the X-Men issues were fun for that, with the big classrooms and meetings and multiple characters. You could have, like, people, like, in the background doing stuff, and, you know, no one's paying you for the apt reader that's kind of catching it and going, oh, I didn't know that, like, so-and-so is doing that over there, or, you know, sometimes, like, I think I did it in Wolverine the X-Men, where I kind of work in my own story behind the story of, like, you know, so, like, if you actually go and read some comics where it's like, I think I duped, you know, doing janitorial work throughout the whole, you know, that's something that's,
yes,
it wasn't in the series, in the script, it's just something like, I want to draw this character, so I'm going to put him in the background, you know, or, you know, if the editor doesn't say anything, like, I think, even like, when I did the Deadpool team-up issue, I drew Spider-Man fighting somebody in the background of like Deadpool's window, like his New York apartment window, and like that wasn't in the script. I was just like, hey, I'm in New York, I want to draw Spider-Man, I'm going to throw it back there, and you know, why not, you know, and like the editor didn't say no, so I'm like, awesome.
So I guess here's the challenge or the dare. Mm-hmm. In an upcoming issue of Hawkeye,
mm-hmm.
maybe on someone's iPod Touch. Maybe they're listening to Mighty Marvel Geeks.
I'll see what I can do.
Awesome.
Oh, I still want Clint Barton in a kimono. That would rock awesomely.
If you squeeze it in, you gotta email us or drop us a line.
I definitely will, yeah.
Oh, dude, that would be awesome.
Because I will be, not that I don't get Hawkeye as it is.
Yeah.
That's one of those, I just want to get another one so I could just frame that page. Go, we've done it.
I say, look, Mom, I'm in a comic.
The show made it.
Yeah.
Top of the world. Top of the world.
It got real. There you go. Awesome.
We're right there with the Hydra FaceTiming. That's what it is.
Hey, you know what? I will take that.
I'll see what I can work in.
It's better food at the above ground underwater suborbital commissary.
Volcano layer, yeah.
Volcano layer commissary. Thank you.
It's the commissary. Awesome. It's the commissary and mess hall.
Yeah. Right.
With a busted ice machine.
Yeah.
Where the soup du jour is the soup of the day.
And the vending machine has nothing but Fresca.
Oh,
Fresca
and Funyuns. Hydra.
Fresca and Funyuns.
Oh, God.
Fresca and Funyuns?
That's going to come back up.
Don't be knocking my Funyuns, man.
No, no, I'm just saying, Fresca and Funyuns, that is not a good combination.
You mix them together the right thing, you have an explosive.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but,
good God.
But remember, we are talking about...
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra!
Are they responsible for refilling our vending machine? Because that's not a good contract.
Let's see. Our contract's with Aramark. I think Aramark's owned by Hydra. Yeah, they might be.
Yeah, it's Hydra. It's all Hydra.
It's all Hydra.
It's all Hydra.
See, that's why. I'm not going to go that route with Disney. Let's just say it's a former CEO of the company whose wife owns Aramark, or used to own Aramark. Hydra.
Hashtag, it's all connected.
Oh, you broke me.
So, we thank you for coming on and joining us for our 100th issue.
That was a lot of fun.
So,
thanks for having me, man. Thanks for the invite.
I'm tickled to death. You made my day when you said, sure, I'd love to come on. So,
and you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, that'd be great. Anytime, I'd love to come back. You guys are fun.
Oh, thank you.
We appreciate that. And like he said, we appreciate you coming on. It's from a pure fanboy perspective. Can you tell I'm fanboying here just a little bit? from a fanboy perspective, this has been one of the interviews I've definitely wanted to get since I started doing the show with Mike and Kylan here.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm flattered. Thank you.
Well, and I just got to say, since you brought up that one of the pleasures you like is going back and reading the old Howard the Duck, I didn't have it queued up. But I'm gonna,
he's got it.
He's gonna do it.
Oh yeah, I saw that in theaters. Okay.
So did I. So did I. See, I'm probably one of seven in the U.S. that actually enjoyed that movie. Back
when
in the
I was
day.
A kid, I loved it.
I still love it now. I still love it now. I mean, for what it was in the 80s, it was a great film.
Yeah, I rewatched it not too long ago, and it was like, I was like, you know what? It still entertains me. Like, it's like, you know what I mean?
I mean, it was cool. I'm not knocking it. I know
George Lucas is embarrassed by it, but he should be more embarrassed of Jar Jar Binks than Howard the Duck.
I agree with that. Yes. Yeah. I agree.
Saying but not saying.
Yeah, the prequels are far worse than Howard the Duck.
It's all a matter of perspective.
Yeah.
It was filmed in Cleveland, so I'm good with it. Well, it's way better than, which was that? Double Dragon, which was also filmed. Oh. So, you know.
I don't think I ever saw that one.
Oh, no. Don't.
Don't worry about it.
Don't.
Don't even bother.
No. If you value your brain cells, don't.
Every so often I go back to like an old movie or something. I'm like, oh yeah, I should watch that again and see how it holds up. And my favorite experience with that was a few years ago. Well, actually probably a few years ago now, like 10 years ago, kind of like we were talking earlier. I went to the video store and I rented the Masters of the Universe movie.
Oh, you did?
But the funniest part was when I went to go rent it, it was on the shelf and whoever, like, it was like a small like indie shop. They had like a little sticker on it. They said, "Don't do it. Don't go back. It's not worth it." And I was like, "I have to. I know." And it was horrible. It was just like it was horrible when I first saw it. And I was like, "But you know, Frank Langella and like Evil-Lyn, as Skeletor and Evil-Lyn were kind of awesome still, though. You know."
And of course, that was one of Canon Films' highlights.
See,
after the Israeli cousins took over.
The documentary about Canon Films is
Electric
on
Boogaloo.
Netflix. Yeah, it's on Netflix
amazing.
Right now.
And, oh yeah,
which actually Masters of the Universe is on too. I've been behooved to watch this movie, and I haven't, and I don't want to be mad. I don't want to.
Well, you know? Yeah, you're not missing out on anything. Let's put it that way, by watching it, by not watching it.
I mean, you might be entertained. It's not like you're watching the Dolph Lundgren's Punisher and then being completely upset, going,
"Why must I punish?"
I thought I was watching Punisher.
I remember that movie all too well.
Yeah, I remember that too.
I almost got caught up in that a couple of nights ago. They were, some station here showed Red Scorpion, and then they followed it with The Punisher. And I was about 20 minutes into it, and I'm like, you know what? No.
The only thing missing...
You just scolded yourself. You're like, no, just stop.
Just stop right now.
The only thing missing from that trifecta is David Hasselhoff's Nick Fury.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Actually, I enjoyed that one much more than I did Dolph Lundgren's Punisher.
Now, I'll admit, whenever they showed Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., I did watch it. Why? Because I thought that was the only Nick Fury I was ever going to get. That was before Ultimate Nick Fury. That's before that we even could conceive of the MCU.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so
you took what you had. I took what you were given.
You know, and thing is, like, now, I can say, you know, looking back on it, I enjoyed it for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say that movie is better than, say, Captain America Winter Soldier? No, I mm-hmm. can't.
I will say the Hoff's Nick Fury is a lot better than the 1977 Doctor Strange TV.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. That was not so good.
Dude, yeah. Jason of Star Command was better than that version of Doctor Strange.
Any of the little kid movies that Gary Coleman did in the late 70s and early 80s was better than...
His recurring role on Buck Rogers was better.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, I think I just broke Kylan.
No.
Wait, he was president of the universe or something?
Some planet.
He's ruler of this one planet, yeah.
Oh.
That's right. I might be pushing limits here. The 1977 Doctor Strange is worse than the idea of Channing Tatum being Gambit.
You might be pushing it a little too far. I think that might be the step too far.
You went to a dark place.
You went
a very, very dark place.
You know what? I think I would rather watch both Captain America movies. Both of the Red Brown Captain America movies and 3 hours of the Spider-Man TV series.
Oh, don't knock the Spider-Man TV series. That was fun.
We're just going down a slippery slope here, dude.
I'm just saying, I'll watch all that before I say I'm okay with that actor, and I'm using that term loosely, playing one of my favorite mutants. That's all I'm saying.
Do I need to brighten things back up there, Kylan?
Okay, please, yes.
Earth's Mightiest Heroes! Earth's Mightiest Heroes! Earth's Mightiest Heroes! Cause Ultron Funk don't give it to you! Cause Ultron Funk don't give it to you! Cause Ultron Funk don't give it to you!
Oh my God!
I actually sometimes have that song going through my head while I'm walking into work.
I can't.
Mike's soundboard is a dangerous, dangerous place to be.
Mm-hmm. And a really fun place too.
The sad part is, I think I'm missing 3 or 4 Marvel soundtracks, and this is for any Marvel movie, be it MCU or Fox, Sony license mm-hmm. movies.
That's impressive.
So,
still,
nonetheless. But yeah, I could pull out some zingers every now and then.
When the time is right.
This is true.
Or be not right.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Be very afraid. Doofenshmirtz Evil Incorporated.
So, again, thank you for coming on and joining us for this milestone.
My pleasure, man.
In our show. And Jarvis, if you would, please.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Nope, just time to go dark. So, Ramon, what...
Yo.
What possible things might be coming up in Hawkeye that you could talk about? In like a brief synopsis.
We're going to be going into Kate's past in the final arc of the new series. So beyond that, I can't really go into too much detail, but...
Okay. So we're going to kind of start delving a little bit more into Kate and where...
Yeah, we're going to delve into kind of like what we did with Clint in the first arc. We're going to delve into Kate's past and, like, kind of fix the little rift they've kind of established between the two characters in this new series. Kind of bring them back to form, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
This has been a Weeby Geeks production.